Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another episode in the News in Reviews, a look at what's happening in the world this week. As always, I'm joined by my most excellent panel. From Youngstown, Ohio, we have author, activist, and teacher Sam Moffey. Sam, welcome.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here, Simon. The Browns choked, and I'm really looking forward to get some of my frustrations out on the panel. No, just kidding. Pleasure to be here.
And by the way, at the two-minute mark, the Chargers are winning.
And looking good. I mean, they looked really good yesterday, last Sunday, against the vaunted Seattle Seahawks, who everybody thought was going to be the greatest undefeated team in the history of football, and the Chargers took it to him last week.
Yeah. I can only assume that that there weren't any tea times available in Charger territory this afternoon, so they decided to actually play the game. but I could be wrong on that. From the City of Angels, we have well-known, well-respected attorney Peter Haven. Peter, great to have you on the program.
Well, thank you very much, Simon. Great to be here, and I look forward to allowing Sam to exercise all his frustrations today.
Oh, I've no doubt he will. Also from the City of Angels, well-known psychologist Dr. Gary Penn. Gary, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much. I am, as always, honored and mortified in advance of what may be said.
Right. I will be sending you a link later. Great British TV series about a psychologist. I think you might enjoy it or not.
I will take a look for sure. One eye open.
And from the Garden State of New Jersey, my good friend Bill Conrad. Bill, how are you doing this week?
I am fine. I'm always anxious to figure out what we're going to say, and I'm always appalled to find out that we really said it. So I'm ready to.
I rather like that. Maybe we should adopt that as our byline.
We're anxious to know what we're going to say because we don't know.
Okay, on with the program. I have to admit that I am just a little disappointed with Congress. They had a nice five-week break in August. They came back to work for, I think it was pretty much six unproductive days. And now they're off on a six-week vacation. I'm assuming they're trying to persuade voters that if you vote for me, I promise I'll put in a couple of extra days next year. Sam, you're a political animal. And doesn't this just make the hairs on your neck rise?
I think we just talked about this at the beginning of the summer when the Memorial Day weekend, this doesn't seem that long ago, and they were doing the same thing. And I think we broke down on the show before how much they get paid for. If you really think about it, they work hardly at all. They get paid great. And now they're going to campaign. Now, basically, we're paying them to campaign to keep their jobs. And fend off a challenger. And, they're getting paid to campaign. And I'm sure very few of them are really doing that. That's it. What are you going to do? And let's face it. You know, the president does have the right to call them back in to get stuff done, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. They seldom do. It's all about elections, about getting the, you know, holding on to the Senate, defeating the Senate, taking the House back. That's that. When, you know, the world's, you know, falling apart, you know, I mean, these guys are all, you know, what else is new? Playing politics. They're very, very good at it, by the way. And the people and the Congress before them was good at it. The Congress before them was good at it, and the Congress before them was good at it. And we shouldn't be surprised. You know, the bar is set so low. What are we surprised
by? Peter, you, I believe, worked on Capitol Hill for a couple of years. I've never inquired what you did or who you did it to. Or four, rather. But did you get you know, lengthy vacations like these boneheads?
Well, it's very interesting. I did not get lengthy vacations. The members of Congress got lengthy vacations, but I didn't. When I graduated from college, I took a job on the Hill working for Congressman Claude Pepper, who was a Democrat from Miami. And I was a legislative assistant for him, which basically meant that most of the time I was writing letters to constituents. You know, when they had a problem or a complaint, I would research it and write a letter to them. And then I would take it over to a machine. There was a giant machine back then in the, this was in the 80s, they had a giant pinwheel machine, and you held the paper on the machine. And as the machine turned, it moved a pen, and it would sign the congressman's name. And while I was there, they upgraded to some new technology that actually just printed out his name. But back then, we had a big pinwheel, and that's how the congressman's name got signed to things, and I would send out those letters. And I didn't get to go on breaks, but they got to go on a lot of breaks, and they're very good at taking vacations, as Sam has correctly identified.
Okay, Gary, does it shock you that, you know, that they have a 5-week vacation, that they come back for 6 days, achieving very little, and then head off on a 6-week vacation to recover from, you know, the brutal 6 days when they did nothing?
No, it doesn't. I think, you know, we have to somehow, I don't know, I think the foundation of our democracy has to change at some point. I think that we should... No, it's set up where it's public financing. It's all about getting donors. I think we have to stop thinking that our way is the only way and the best way. We're like an Oldsmobile, our democracy. And people think it's the best, and it's really not. It's really been exposed these last few years as a very flawed system. And we're getting a lot of people that are just PR They're just made up by PR machines that deal to fear, religion, and we need something like a 6-week, you know, more like on the other countries that have a 6-week cycle of elections, and we really have to stop this. And unless you you have to hit rock bottom before things change. I just don't think it's really sad.
Bill, you're a working stiff. Most of us working stiffs, if we're lucky, get 2 weeks a year of vacation time. What do you make of Congress?
Well, you know, I've looked at this very intensely, and I think that Congress is trying to do a certain amount of reforming. Like, they're trying not to lie about why they didn't come into work. So by scheduling themselves with this great range of time off work. They don't have to pick up excuses. Like we have a thing in the radio world here in New York, in which you can call up your local radio station, and if you're chosen, they're the ones that will call in on your behalf that you're going to be out sick, and they make up really good excuses. With Congress, they don't have to because they're never there anyway. And so we look at our congressmen and our House of Rep and every in the Senate, and we say, you know what? I think they're getting to be more honest because they're not making up as many lies as they did last year because they have all this time off work, so they don't have to lie to us.
I rather like that. And, you know, actually, I like to try and put a positive, spin on things. People like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, love to shout up from the rooftops about impending doom. There's a bigger question here. If there is impending doom, why doesn't Congress stay in session and actually work for a living? Oh, silly me. It's all about fundraising and keeping their jobs. There's something wrong here. I think we should stop talking about election reform, which never gets anywhere because no one's going to vote for it. There's too much money at stake. And maybe we should concentrate on Congress reform. Sam... I think it was you that figured out that they're working a staggering 113 days this year.
That I think it's something like that. Yeah, it's an outrageous. It's an insult to the people, as the panel has pointed out, as you pointed out, many other people have. Far smarter than I. Studied all this. It's no reason why they're. I think they have a 2% approval rating, and that's only the people who work for them and give them money and make money off them. They're the only 2% who approve of them and themselves and their family. It's the joke. We shouldn't be surprised. Yet they vote on all these things, and they can't get out of town fast enough. They can't get their mugs in front of a mic fast enough. To get a soundbite in on the national news. And all over the place, and they're raising money, raising donors. I mean, right now, everyone's trying to position themselves for 2016. I mean, right now the big race is to hold on to the Senate for the Democrats and to try to take the Senate away for the Republicans, to take control of it, and then they can screw up the agendas even more than they've already done. I mean, it's more about getting the 51 votes in the Senate than actually having a... agenda to move America forward. I mean, that's what I think is pathetic. And the same thing, the Democrats want to take over the House to get it away from, because they want the power, they want the extra money that goes with it. I haven't seen what their agenda is. The president seems to have somewhat of an agenda, but, he does his own thing. It's no wonder presidents, whether it's Bush or Obama or Clinton or Reagan, do executive orders. I mean, the Congress is a joke. I shouldn't say that. In my lifetime, there are two Congresses I can say did work together with the president. It would be Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, who left this country with a surplus. And if everyone forgets about that, they worked together. And Clinton made a nice comeback, but Newty was vilified for whatever he did wrong. And he was thrown out. And Tip O'Neill and Reagan worked together to get some things done. But in both instances, America moved forward, whether we like or not Reagan's policies or Clinton's. By working together, they found some compromise, and they moved the country forward. And I can't think of any other time since then that the Congress and the president see eye to eye. It's very strange. Whenever it comes to war, You know, we've got Republican congressmen and senators siding with the president. You know, and then the opposite happens. You get the Democrats siding, with the Republican president. You know, it's just really strange. You know, the coalitions that build the only coalition that's broken party lines in the Obama's been president for the last 8 years has been when the neocons joined with him when the war drums are being banged. Other than that, they all hate each other, and nothing gets done. And I don't think it was set up to be that way.
No, and neither do I. Gary, would you agree with my philosophy that, you know, let's forget about reforming the funding, and let's talk about refunding reworking the way that Congress operates?
No, I really think it's the funding. I think that if they were there 300 days a year, they would be 300 days a year doing nothing. I mean, there's nothing to be done. The party right now, at least on the right, they don't believe in government. It's funny, you know, when you have more of a, when you go to Europe and you have the income inequality that you have there, they want more of a socialist world. And in the American economy, when you have income inequality, you want more of a Tea Party world. It's a very weird thing where we at right now as a country. We have to get money out of politics. I think that if they were working more, they would just be working doing nothing. There's no, I think, like I said, Simon, 1,000 times, the Republican Party needs to be destroyed. The Democratic Party has to be reformed, has to be fixed tremendously. We're just really broken. The Republicans don't believe in government. The only government that the Republicans believe in is putting people away for drugs and getting inside your business as far as sexuality and abortion rights. Then they believe in very big government. Outside of that, they don't. And war. Apparently, the American government does war very well. They can't deliver a letter, apparently, but we could bomb the hell out of everybody. So we do war very well, and the Republicans, that's all they want to do is kill people who get abortions and shame you if you're gay or what have you. So it's a very disgusting system.
No,
I think the Republican platform and the Republican Party, the people who are leading it, I agree with you, Sam, but it's the people who are leading it.
You know, and I'm going to toot my own guy. I mean, and it's amazing. I'm sorry to butt in, but you brought up something I completely forgot about, Gary. There's two senators working, Rand Paul and Cory Booker, Republicans and Democrats, are actually working to try to get this crazy drug sentencing brought back to reality. And all these people have been thrown behind bars, costing taxpayers millions and billions of dollars, and get them out and change it. And it's both establishments of their respective parties are blocking it. So it is amazing when you do see a bipartisan on something good, a good issue, and climate, you know, whatever it is. And then you see the establishment of both sides step up to block people from working together. And, it's frustrating. Because, you know,
it's not going to happen because of the prison guard union. So that's the money I'm saying. If the money was out
right,
of politics,
I agree with you. That's what I'm trying to say.
It would be a huge difference.
Or the private prison money. It's exactly. And it's not just Citizen United. You're right. You bring up a great point. It's not just the campaign money. It's the people who are sucking off the tip of the policy, too. You're right. Good point. Okay. I'm sorry to butt in.
No, I said my piece, but that's it.
Okay.
I got it out there.
Okay. Bill, you want to weigh in?
No, I think we covered it good. We are broken. Both parties are broken, and if there's the right thing to do, they avoid doing the right thing, and it's all about themselves and the money, and the lobbyists happy, and we got to stop it.
Well, that's the sad part. Is how do we fix it? How can it be fixed? What would you change? What would you do differently? And, you know, if you think about fixing problems like this, then you really see just how bad the problem really is, because it is so hard to try to reform or fix these kinds of things that we're talking about. And, as everyone's been talking, I've just been thinking, well, what could we do differently? How would we do it differently? And I honestly don't know, because it comes down at the end of the day to just, you know, people are the problem. I don't think the system is the problem. I think people are the problem, and I don't know how you fix that.
You are so right, Peter. You need like a Gandhi, and you really need like a revolution to happen in our country, because I think at some point, and I think what may get us there is the income inequality, and it may, you know, when you feel hopeless and helpless like they do in the Arab countries, the population rises up. And when people, you know, it just came out of the New York Times, I think today or yesterday, that the median income of Americans is lower than it was in 2007. And, of course, the wealthiest are getting more and more and more wealthy. And you got rid of the estate taxes and everything else, and everything is just shifting to one side of the table. And I think you just kind of need a revolution.
Okay, Gary, I agree with you, but Peter's point is well taken too. We need a revolution, and who's going to take those first bullets? Because our thin blue line is going to protect their own jobs. They ain't going to join in the revolution. Like
no,
the
it doesn't have to
did.
Be an armed revolution. It just has to be kind of a Gandhi, a Martin Luther King. Everyone stops working. Everyone stops working for the Koch brothers. Everyone stops working for all of these companies. And we say it's going to stop. And maybe if someone has the voice to do it, someone has the gravitas to be like a Martin Luther King of the income slavery that we're in, things might change. But until that happens, I completely agree with Peter. It's not going to – something has – the people have to change.
Because unfortunately, and I agree with you, and let's take your plan one step further. Okay, well, someone's going to call – Cesar Chavez is going to come out of the – come up and rise up and say, okay, all workers stop working. And the bosses are going to say, you're all fired, and we'll make sure you don't get unemployment. So therefore, and everyone, because they're so afraid of the big bad government, they won't, and they need their paycheck. They got to put their kids through school. They got to put food on the table. They're afraid to do it. I mean, I was going to bring
well,
something
that,
up
that's
earlier.
Well, that's a really good point, because you just touched upon the one of the core problems. And one of the core problems is that the world is governed by money. It's governed by capitalism, and it's governed by money, and everything that everybody does is a function of how many dollars they can get for doing it. So just think about that problem for a minute. How could you ever fix that? How could you ever fix that? What could you do?
Martin Luther King did it, and Gandhi did it. And if you have someone to motivate people, and when people stopped, when the blacks stopped riding the buses, they suffered tremendously. They couldn't get to work. And they suffered, but it moved the needle in a very profound way. Now, I'm not saying that you can do this without tremendous suffering. You have to break it down. You have to break everything down in order to build it up. But the key is you have to break things down. And at
not
the end of the day,
you have to do. You have to. You can't make an omelet without breaking eggs, as Robespierre said during the French Revolution.
Well, that's right. I agree.
Not.
Yes.
People have to
you
die.
Have to break
it nonviolently.
Well, what if you shook the egg up inside and beat it up inside and then boiled it? Could you have an omelet that way?
That's called poached
egg.
Well,
I will say that. Okay, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the French farmers and their little mini revolution that's going on, if anybody was paying attention.
Ooh la la. Let's talk about that.
Now you're just showing off, Sam.
They are pissed off because the Russians. Because of the many, many reasons. But a big one was the European sanctions on Russia hurt them. What little market they had to make a few bucks was dried up. So they've been losing money hand over fist. The taxes are high. There's this and that. They actually took truckloads of Brussels sprouts, whatever you want to say, vegetables, and dumped them at a tax collector's office so they couldn't get out. And they set the building on fire. It's a real mess over there. But they are fighting back, Gary. And there is a leader, I forget what his name is, and he's trying to rally the French farmers who they're getting screwed. They're not getting, you know, the Monsanto of France is making all the money. The middlemen are making all the money. And the product's not getting to the markets. It has started a mini little revolution up there, started by these farmers, much like Shay's Rebellion over the whiskey tax in the, after the America was founded. How far will it go? Who knows? Because as we talked about and Peter brought up, these farmers still got to put, at the end of the day, they still got to pay their mortgage, they still got to pay their workers, they still got to put food on the table, although I'm sure they can self-grown. But, you know, that's the problem. How do you get this money thing all straightened out? And if one of you four can answer that, I'm going to be really happy.
Well, it's surprising that it didn't happen after the financial crisis. I know you had the 99 percenters and all that stuff. I was really discouraged that it didn't move the needle. Which, you know, it makes you feel absolutely hopeless. Like, if that wouldn't do it, like if the guy stays with his wife after she's having sex with eight guys in their living room, and he still stays with her, what are you going to do? I mean, what could happen where the person says, I'm finally done? And after the financial meltdown and everything else, and now we're listening to the Koch brothers and all these people. You know, listen, we have to, as a country, I think we just have to totally get destroyed and broken down. I just don't understand. Our country is fundamentally broken, and it's very sad.
Did you ever think that after the meltdown in 2008, that 6 years later, stock markets would be at 18,000 points? It would be in the same old be going on.
No.
I'm amazed after all the mortgage fraud that now, 5 years later, whatever it is, I'm getting called now for the liar loans again. Hey, your house is now worth $600,000. What? Take pull cash out. Do this. Do that. And you know, it's the same old. Nothing changed. Yeah, you're right.
That's right.
No one got punished except for the little guy. When old GM, my favorite one was the bankruptcy of GM, which is near and dear to my heart because of a huge plant that was up here. And a lot of people I know, who little middle people, small vendors who had were owed a lot of money by old GM, a.k.a. bad GM, and they went bankrupt. And all those people lost savings, they lost their pension, they lost their companies. And then the new GM came in with no debt. I mean, it was amazing that was allowed to happen. But it did. No one stood up. No one stood up for any of that stuff. And now look at what we got with GM. They're recalling more cars than they're selling.
Yeah, there's got to be a Gandhi, really. There's got to be a Gandhi for the economic slavery that exists right now. And, you know, it's basically a bloodless revolution by the elite and by the moneyed interest of our country. And it's been a bloodless coup, and it's been done by people who are smarter than everyone else and have the resources of everyone else, and they've done Jedi mind tricks on our population, on both parties, I would say, for sure. I don't exclude Democrats at all from this. So they've done like a bloodless revolution, and I think our country is just, the American dream is gone. I used to always believe that with all our flaws, our country was the best and the greatest, and I honestly don't believe it anymore. I just don't believe it. I think our country is in peril, that we're doing damage to the world, and I don't know what's going to happen to the American dream. It's really quite sad that this is what's happening to us, that this has happened to us, basically.
Okay. Let's go back to Congress and what a wonderful job they do. The one thing that they did approve in their albeit brief trip to Washington was to approve funding of arming Syrian rebels against ISIS. But let's face it, this is likely to backfire because it's not clear who they hate more, Bashar al-Assad, ISIS, or the U.S. Are we just throwing good money after bad? I'll open it to anyone. Sam, I'll pick on you because I know you
I wanted Bill to go. I needed a break. Bill, you go first. I gotta get a drink of water. I'm sorry, my throat's dry.
Yeah, we're throwing good money after bad, but somebody's making money doing it. So there you go. That's the short answer.
And Bill?
Yeah, it's such an inequity for the American people. We're putting all this, you know, we're finding things to almost divert us away from what's really wrong with America and with the world. And, you know, it's almost like we're finding scapegoats. I mean, they're bad people. ISIS is not a good country or organization or whatever you want to term them. But we're completely missing the reason that we're a government and that we're supposed to be supporting our people and we're supposed to have be a shining example to the rest of the world on when we used to be a great government and a great society, and everyone's distracted by the these urgent things that come up because they don't realize how we're letting everyone down. Bottom line, we gotta stop.
Gary, I'm pretty certain I know your answer here. But
well, listen, the idea of two beheadings equal, I guess, what, $500 billion for each beheading. It's the American overreaction of, you know, well, I'm hungry. Let me give you a dump truck's worth of food because I'm a little bit hungry. Our overreaction because two guys got beheaded, it's the same thing that happened with 9/11. It's the overreaction of what we did. And the overreaction that we're sitting here and seeing this, Simon, it's a great question. What if we did nothing? What if we said to the world, we're not going to do anything. You guys figure it out. It's closer to your backyard than it is to ours. We're not going to do a thing. I bet you Russia, I bet you Germany, I bet you England, I bet you France, they would all get their armies up there and they'd take care of business. But Obama tried. I mean, to his credit, he tried. He tried, you know, but to his discredit, he finally gave in. But he tried to say, we're not doing anything. And he keeps on saying, no ground troops, no ground troops. Why can't Merkel be the one saying, we're going to be the leader? Why does it have to be Obama? Obviously, it has to be Obama because George Bush set the table, and so that's why he's doing it. But it's too bad.
And I've got something I'd like to add now that I've had my drink of Gatorade. You guys have all made great points, but I want to add something to go back to what Simon asked, and is, was this a good idea to aid the Syrian rebels? And we had this discussion last Labor Day of weekend of 2013 after it was alleged that Assad had used chemical weapons. And at that point, a coalition of libertarian Republicans and liberal Democrats stood up to Obama, who wanted to send a couple of Scud missiles or whatever into up Assad's asshole and to say, you can't do that, and send him a lesson. But it was talked down because other people said, we don't know who the bad guys are. If we topple Assad, then what? And that's here we are. Now we are actually going to give $500 million to some unknown Syrian rebels who will probably lose, who will probably sell the stuff to ISIS, will probably buy it from them or take it from them. And all those weapons are going to potentially fall in the hands of ISIS or other enemies. What a stupid idea when you've got 17,000 people in Detroit who can't turn on their water. But we're sending $500 million to rebels who we don't know if they're really for us, as you pointed out, Simon. Who do they love? Who do they hate? We know they love us for our money. Yet today I read 17,000 families in Detroit had their water shut off Friday for the failure to make payments. So they don't even have water. That's how bad things are in Detroit. That's how bad things are in this country, going back to what Gary talked about, the inequity of wealth. That's what's going on. And we're sending money out to that. I mean, yeah, Gary, we shouldn't do anything. Shouldn't we have learned our lesson? I guess we haven't. But we're going to keep sending the warmongers, the war profiteers, the war economy that's been going on since 9-1-1. Actually been going on for a lot longer than that. It's going to continue to go on at the expense of the American taxpayers. A few people are going to make money off it. A lot of people are going to get killed by it. And it's a sad state of affairs, because I don't know where these weapons are going to. They didn't say, hey, we're giving this weapon. You know, how could you send $500 million? Maybe this is why Congress doesn't need to be in session at all. Maybe we'd be better off if they didn't meet. $500 million to rebels who might take out Assad, but Assad wants to defeat ISIS. You know, on one hand, he's on our side. On the other hand, he isn't on our side. But we don't like him for whatever reason, because he may or may have not have used chemical weapons against his own people 30 years ago. You know, it goes on and on and on. And it's just disgusting. What's going to happen? You know, if you think about it, gang, Bin Laden may be dead, but he won. He's totally changed the way we operate. We spy on each other. Government spies on us, and because we're afraid everyone's a terrorist. We spend billions and billions of dollars. Our treasury has been bled dry. Boys and girls have been maimed, killed, shot, wounded. We're still involved. We haven't learned a damn thing, and we still are afraid. Terrorism is on the rise, not on the fall. And what a mess. I mean, you know.
Oh, it's a complete mess. Now, for several years, I was involved with helping the homeless. And I know how far $500 million could go to, you know, ease that problem. So I'd rather see $500 million spent here rather than, in Syria. And let's face it, those $500 million are not going to Syria. They're going to defense contractors here in the U.S., I mean, it's complete bullshit.
Yeah, it's a bailout, another blank check for the defense industry. Like I said, why people can't have running water in Detroit and in other places. You know, it's pretty pathetic.
Any comments on that, Bill?
I'm certainly in favor of trying to redistribute the wealth here in the United States. You just think of helping people get back into homes and resolving the small businessmen's woes to redevelop a stronger economy in the United States. There's just so much potential the government could do. There's so much potential that could change the conditions of America, and the government as it is, chooses not to help the common person out there, and it's just pathetically wrong.
And Peter, I know that you're a fan of the common good. It wouldn't the common good be to spend that money at home rather than abroad?
Well, I mean, I tend to think so. But, you know, I keep circling back on the same problems over and over again. And it's just, you know, people are greedy and they always act, or they tend to act, in their own self-interest. And, you know, when people see a homeless person on the street, they don't really want to give that homeless person money. They think that the homeless person is somehow responsible for where they are and why they're there. And they, on the other hand, are working hard and trying to earn a living. And at a certain level, you know, I understand that feeling. And it's hard to tell people that they should each walk by the homeless guy and give him a dollar. And there's somebody sitting there saying, hey, wait a minute, now you've given the homeless guy a lot more money than any of you have. And, it's just an intractable problem. I don't know how to solve it. I don't know how to fix any of this. The same people you want to try to feed and to help are the same people who get angry with you if you tell them they can't eat Snickers bars or drink 64 ounces of Coca-Cola. So, I don't know what to do. It's just a hopeless quagmire, it seems to me. And when people have the ability to make decisions that are broad scale and sweeping, like funding these types of assistance to military rebels, there's always a amount of self-interest that is at work. And I just don't know how to stop it. I don't know how to change it. It's depressing just to think about it. I remember seeing some movie once. It was set in the future, and someone said, "Wow, that must have cost a lot." And the person said, "Well, we don't have a world based on capitalism anymore. We just all work together to try to achieve the maximum utility that we can for society and for people." And idealistically, I'd like to see something like that. But realistically, I just don't think it's ever going to happen. Unless there's some sort of massive world order change and you have this vision of one centralized leadership that kind of controls everything in the world. Otherwise, how do you ever fix these problems? I just don't know. It certainly saps the hope out of you when you think about it, in my opinion.
Well, surely we already have that. I think the company's called Apple. They've got
that's a very good suggestion that you just made, or a comment, because, there are lots of people who think that in the future the world will just be a series of corporate entities. And so let's look at that for a moment. Does that model work? What if the world were governed by corporate entities, five or six mega corporations that basically controlled everything? Well, then I worry that corporate entities exist solely for the purpose of maximizing profit, and they don't care about the consequences to people and the planet. So I don't know. I don't know how that works. Maybe you have a company that has a heart. I don't know if that's possible. I really don't know. It seems to me it's all one. It's all one version of the same thing. You call it Congress or you call it Apple. I just don't know sometimes what the difference is anymore.
Sam, you're a bit of a movie buff. Do you remember the original version of Rollerball?
That's what I was thinking about when Peter was talking.
I do. One of my favorite movies.
And that's what I think you're talking about, Rollerball.
I was talking about lots of films have featured the same
concept. Brave New World.
I
think it's going to be worse, though, because I think you're going to see more of a 1984-ish. If you saw the movie, I thought was an excellent, the one with Richard Burton and John Hurt, the British version. Simon, I'm not just saying that just to play up to you. But it was bleak. There was much better than some of the other versions I've seen, and it really hit what I think you're going to have. Television sets everywhere, people spying on each other, very few people, a ruling class that will live like they live now, and everybody else just being, just relaxed. They have a job. Other things, my dad always thought that when he died 10 years ago. He always thought that the world kept going the way it was going, and he was a World War II bombardier. He's buried in Arlington, patriotic to a certain point, but always questioned things about where we were heading. He thought if he had to make a prediction, he thought the world was going to be like Soylent Green, if you saw that movie.
Well, let me make one statement. I don't know how much longer you have me for, but, in relationships, any kind of relationship, someone's best quality is almost always their worst quality. If someone's a planner, they can never be spontaneous or something. And
I think what you've seen happening with the American dream is our best quality has become our worst quality. And we've really become addicted to the opiate of money, that even after the financial meltdown, even after that, even after families were destroyed, Mitt Romney almost won the presidency. All the Republican Party was mocking a community organizer. And so it seems like for some reason we have become addicted. We're like the person who makes $2,000 a month, and we still go to Vegas. We still go off to the slot machines at the gas stations in Vegas looking to get rich. And we don't want to give up that dream because we feel it seems kind of weird that the more hopeless and the more desperate we feel, the more we want the ability to get the big jackpot that's going to make us $30 million. But after all that happened, the Republicans put forward Mitt Romney. And or the other part about it is what happens in the Muslim countries, the more desperate you come, the more you want Christ to save you because you feel more and more helpless. So the more you become more religious. So it's very sad. Like I said, we need a Gandhi to lead us out of the financial slavery that we're in. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but it's quite desperate, I think.
Okay. Sam, you mentioned Rollerball and Soylent Green.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I really think so. And the more I think about it, now that you brought this up, you know, it's laid dormant in me. And based upon a subject we always touch upon, greed, selfishness, narcissism, and all that of our leaders, and the one percenters and all that, I think Soylent Green would be a more romantic way for the world to end up. But I think Soylent Green would be more like it, where it's every person for themselves, where strawberry jam will cost $150 a jar, and there won't be overpopulation. Gary, this is your subject. Climate control was screwed up. The world, the food supplies have become scarce and all that sort of stuff because making money was more important to the leaders. And, of course, Soylent Green, the panel all know the ending of Soylent Green?
It's people.
People, okay. That the food, the only way to feed people were to kill them and then turn their bodies into Soylent Green wafers because they would run out of food and it was overpopulated. And it was really well done. And more, as I get older and you start to see that, you could see that happening. The police were in riot control. But that movie always struck me is when Edward G. Robinson went to the death camp the nice death camp, as I could say, is when he
showed a movie.
They were showing pictures of, and he was listening to classical music, and he was showing pictures of running water and flowers and this and that, and he goes to Charlton Heston, and he goes, look at it, wasn't it beautiful? Yeah, and just think about that as we watch our world. Look at China. I mean, and the environment's becoming more worse and worse. Blight, everything. I mean, it really is. It almost is. I could see it becoming I could see Soylent Green being more of a realistic ending to the society than I can see zombies coming. That's for sure.
Right. Actually, on the day I watched Soylent Green in the theater, it was part of a doubleheader. The other movie was The Omega Man.
Oh, another classic.
But that's the
isn't
one with
funny?
Charlton Heston, too, right?
Well, yeah. Isn't
correct.
That funny that Charlton Heston, who was a real right-wing fanatic, made a bunch of movies that were very... Soylent Green was anti-corporation, about climate control, overpopulation, pollution, the carbon and all that. And Omega Man was about germ warfare. I mean, and they were message movies. Do you agree, Simon?
Oh yes,
they were big time message movies. And it's funny, people always associate him with this, the gun rights. But look at some of his movies made, and a lot of other people don't realize. I'm going to plug Charlton here. He's one of the first white actors to march with Martin Luther King and recognize the importance of the civil rights movement. Okay, I'm off that.
All right.
Oh, he wasn't right. marching with him, Simon. He was providing security. He had a gun.
Okay. Let's move on to another hot topic. Let's talk about the NFL. And I'm proud to say the Chargers won today. But that's not really the story. The NFL has been in a lot of hot water, shall we say, over the past few weeks, over domestic abuse cases. But do the stats actually stand up, or are we being given a load of bull by the press? Who would like to answer that one?
Well, what stats are you talking about? What are you actually referring to?
Okay. Some knucklehead with clearly too much time on his hands actually went and looked at the statistics of how many players get arrested and for what, and compared it to the national average. And here's the odd thing. The NFL players, and at any given time, particularly during training camps, there are something like 2,600 of them. And the answer is, they are basically half as likely to commit a crime as anyone in the general public.
Well, I'm not sure I believe that. But let's just talk about the NFL for a moment, and let's see if we can extend some of these discussions that we've been having. It plays into the whole rollerball philosophy. What is the NFL? The NFL is a collection of 32 mega corporations that have regional citizens scattered throughout the United States. Each mega corporation is run like a small, tiny government fiefdom, and collectively they constitute some sort of national enterprise. There's a body of local laws that govern each local team, and then there's higher laws that affect it on the national level. And what is the primary function of the NFL? If you had to break it down to one basic thing, what would the function of the NFL be? And the answer, it would be
money.
Overridingly, to make money. Now, they attempt to be charitable and philanthropic, and that's a big theme that is broadcast throughout this mini nation that, the players are and the entities and the organizations are all supposed to give back, and I think they take it seriously. Each entity has its own department of charity and community relations and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, the sole function is to make money. Now, interestingly, if you look at this Ray Rice incident, and it's just one incident, in the past several years, there have been, multiple accounts just of domestic violence. And we're not even talking about murders, rapes, theft, drug dealing. It just runs the gambit. And in this particular instance, the evidence seems to suggest that at the local level, the ownership of the Baltimore Ravens was very fond of this guy. And not only were they very fond of him, and so you have themes of human sympathy playing into it, But they had they had certain advertising of investments associated with him. And in particular, there seems to have been a large bank advertisement contract that was associated with having this guy as the poster boy. And the owner in particular had always had these functions and charities that he wanted the guy to attend. And apparently every time he called him up and said, go to this function or go to that function, the guy would. And so the local entity went to great lengths to try to basically downplay this and minimize the sentence. And the NFL brass basically went along with it. And then later on, it all blew up, and then they overreacted. We talk about how frequently, these things go on, and suddenly there's this massive overreaction to it, and that's what's happening now. And despite it all, the common man gets up at the end of the day and says, at the beginning of the Sunday, and says, boy, I'm going to really try and take my mind off things by spending the whole day watching football. And what's the solution? Where do you go? And the sponsors, invest heavily. These mega corporations invest in these other mega corporations, and the sponsors say, listen, we're Anheuser-Busch, and we're not really happy with some of the things you've done. And boom, the corporate entities snap into line, and they say, okay, well, we have to take care of the sponsors. And that's how the business gets done. And, what are you left with at the end of the day? Insofar as your observation, Simon, that someone suggests that the incidence of crime in this particular demographic, the population being NFL football players, is about the same as the general population?
No, I'm not saying that. It's under 50% of general population.
Well, so it's less than the general population?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, that's what someone's statistics suggest. And I guess my question is, I guess I don't know if I believe it, although on the one hand, I would say, well, I would certainly hope it's less. These guys are paid a massive amount of money to do stupid things, basically, in the grand scheme of things, to provide entertainment. And they make massive amounts of money. So presumably they would be less subject to crime simply because they're more affluent. And so at one level, what you say may make sense. At another level, boy, I tell you, it seems like every time I wake up in the morning, it's not just these guys, it's other guys. They're always getting into some trouble, and that speaks to the power of power, that when people have privilege and power, it still doesn't stop them from behaving badly. They do it anyway, even though they have no need to. So, I don't know. I don't know what you do with any of it. It's a microcosm of human life and the human condition. And, whether you talk about it in terms of funding rebels in Syria or bending over backwards to protect these guys or bailing out the Wall Street bank robbers who rip us all off, but apparently the system needs them, it all seems to me to be the same thing over and over and over and over again.
Okay, the statistics that I read earlier today, I don't have them in front of me right at the moment. The most common thing that an NFL player gets pulled over for is DUI. Right. However, from a statistical standpoint, it's something like 10% of the statistics for the general population. So it's not very common. Where the NFL really scores high, though, is domestic abuse. It's still only 55% of the statistics for the general population. It really is quite high.
Simon, I have to go, so I'm going to say goodbye to you. But I wanted to say one thing.
The only reason why this is on is because it was on television and we saw what Ray Rice did. And the only reason why we want to go to war right now is because the beheadings were on the West. And, you know, we are able to compartmentalize things until it's put right in our face. We could say we're in a bad marriage until we come home and we see one of our spouse having an affair, but we'll ignore it until that point. It just happens all the time that when the only reason why this is an issue, Simon, the only reason why this is everyone's outraged is because it was on television. No one, you know, there was a little bit of complaint, but when we saw the left hook, we were outraged. And that's just the way we are. And we're a very simple people. We're very malleable. And, you know, it's the Willie Horton ads. It's all these things. We'll believe what people tell us, what PR machines tell us. And, you know, like I said, when we're that pliable and that malleable and that really dopey as a country, we get everything we get, we deserve. Men, thank you for the opportunity to pontificate, and hopefully I'll be able to do it again next week. Be well.
Okay. You have yourself a great week.
All right.
Gary was leading me into the area I wanted to talk about. You know, from a statistical standpoint, they're not doing anything bad. They're much better than most people. However, we have the wonderful world of television and the internet. So, you know, for every, you know, 2,000 abuse cases that happen in the general population, there's only one that gets reported. Yeah.
That's a weird noise going on. What is it?
I think it's Gary.
Wait, is it you didn't hang up his phone correctly? Oh, you're on a speaker. You're making a martini or something.
We're being monitored, gentlemen.
Okay. Gary brings up a good point. Not only was it televised, and I said this point last week, and I'm going to bring it up. If this was a practice squad player, not a superstar, we would know about it. We only know the high-profile stuff. And, you know, and that's what we are. We're a nation. We've been brought up to be a nation of rubberneckers at the accident. And that's what has happened. I think it's very interesting that the guy from the St. Louis Cardinals did a one-upmanship on Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson. He beat his wife and his child at the same time. But think how many we don't know about. I mean, I was told for years, being a movie buff, and you know, Jim Brown routinely beat up girls. I don't know if that's true or false. I think he's had some problems, but it was covered up because he was a superstar. And we've talked. Someone have someone on a speakerphone?
Okay.
Difficulties, or is it me?
No. I unfortunately, both Gary and Peter are dialed in on the same number, and I'm trying to figure out who the naughty boy is.
I mean, is someone on a speakerphone? Is that what this is? Because I thought Gary hung up.
Peter joined the conversation first.
Oh, okay.
We're gone. Oh, that was annoying. but I was trying to say is that, you know, we if they weren't superstars, we wouldn't be paying attention to them. Oh, boy. And that's a terrible thing. And the NFL, you know, and I think, you know, it appears that the NFL, the Raven owners knew about this before anybody, and they covered it up. And then the NFL covered it up. And now the truth has come out, and guess what? Next year, Ray Rice will be playing somewhere. Because as Peter correctly pointed out
Okay. All right. Noise is still here. And process of elimination. Bill, it has to be you.
Well, you could say that, except that when I'm not speaking, I've pressed mute on my telephone, so.
Can you guys hear me?
Is it me? It's a really weird noise.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know what's going on. I changed telephones, and I don't know if it was me that was causing it, but I don't think it is.
I think it's Gary.
Well, I think Gary dropped off.
Yeah.
You want me to drop off and dial back in and see what happens? But again, I've been muting my microphone.
Yeah, let's try it. Peter, is that you coming in from area code 213?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I just dropped your other connection. All right. life seems right. to be good.
So okay. Now what the hell is that? What do you call it? Technical snafu, technical difficulties have been eliminated.
Right.
Well, I think Peter brought up a great point. You know, Gary brought up a great point about it being it's on television, so we know about it. Peter brought up a great point last week that, you know, hey, Ray Rice, his wife standing by his side, that had a way into the defense. The other defense, you know, things that I've seen is that it's all about the money, as we've always talked about. The Ravens didn't want to do anything to him. The NFL didn't want to do anything to him, you know, for whatever reason. And I do think he probably will be playing somewhere next year. He's a heck of a ball player. But again, as I said last week, and I'm going to say it again, the NFL is a huge business. So is college football. So is high school football. So is peewee football. And if your kid is a good football player, or your kid is a good blank soccer player, baseball player, basketball player, they are treated differently than any other one because they may be a first-round draft choice. There's lots
of
money involved.
True.
And everybody looks and they're just treated differently. They get grades, they get passes, they get goals. People look up to them. I mean, I see high school kids and football is king in Northeast Ohio, where they have entourages. My cousin, they have entourages. And it didn't, you know, and that's what you've got. And, you know, look at basketball. I wish Manny was on because he forgets more about basketball than I know. He was taught, you know, why the NBA is so bad. And I used to, you know, think, oh, it's disparity of money and this and that. He goes, no, you've got kids coming out at age 18 years old, out of college, 1 year, not learning anything except to play more basketball, get a huge contract, and they're 18, 19 years old playing a game with players in their late 20s and 30s. Just dominate them. And the quality of the game has suffered, and it has because they don't know how to play, and that, you know, I think they should have to stay in college for 4 years, and there should be some normal rules passed, but it's ruined the NBA, so I'm not surprised, you know, by this. Look, and it's also, we can take it one step further. Let's not just say athletes. How many people have ever we all know about the person with the famous last name who gets away with the OVI? Who might get away with the domestic violence, who might get away with fill in the blank because of their name, their money, their wealth, their fame, their stature in the community. Could be a doctor in a small town. Could be anything. And, I guess we shouldn't be – I'm not surprised by it at all. I'm, you know, just – it's just – I scratch my head. And actually, to be honest with you, considering where some of these kids have come from, in the ghettos they live in, I'm surprised a lot more of them aren't involved. I mean, look at this Fernandez. Was that his name, the tight end for the Patriots? I mean, he was literally a gang leader at the University of Miami and took that same sort of thing into the locker room. heck of a football player, but you couldn't take. But he was a gangbanger, you know, and that's what he, you know, and that's amazing. He killed people. I don't know if I, and I'll let it go on this. Wes Walker, one of the reasons, allegedly Wes Walker left the Patriots was because the whole thing with Fernandez. He didn't like, you know, the guy was a real presence in the locker room, and I don't mean in a positive note.
That's
a rumor. I don't know if there's any truth to that. I mean, I sure as heck would rather be playing for having Tom Brady as a quarterback than Peyton Manning. Nothing against Peyton.
Well, I'll send them a memo, make sure they know that. That would be good.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it. I mean, would you leave? I mean, Walker had, I mean, not that he didn't do bad for that, but, I mean, that's what I've heard from friends of mine who live in Massachusetts. A lot of other players did, too, that, you know, with the winning, it was Belichick, it was Brady. But there was a story that a friend of mine from Massachusetts told me, who was a reporter, that, you know, that they have, as we all know, they have hazing. And Fernandez said, as a rookie, if any of you try to haze me, I will kill you. I mean, he was that scary. And, you know, and you think about all the big, huge football players that have been hazed, in good nature. You know, they make them dress up as girls, whatever, you know. I'm sure it wasn't physical abuse other than that incognito and Martin thing, which maybe it was par for the course, but that's one reason. But, well, you look at Fernandez. Peter, you remember, who was the... Well, maybe he was a baseball player. I was thinking who burnt his girlfriend's house down. He was a baseball player. David Justice. Well, no, his girlfriend burnt
his... Oh, yeah, David Justice.
Remember, no, his girlfriend burnt his house down. She was a rap star. So, I mean, and I think Gary brings up a good point. We see it on TV. Therefore, it's, it's right in our living room. It's right in our lap. And, if I was the owner of the Ravens, and if Ray Rice makes my team better, then I want Ray Rice to play. I mean, heck, they kept Ray Lewis, the murderer, on the team. And what is he now? He's a Hall of Fame linebacker who's on ESPN. He makes a couple million dollars a year for talking about football games. So, I mean, why are we surprised? And then we talked about last week with Adrian Peterson, right? I wouldn't doubt if his mom and dad beat him with a stick at one point. Is that bad? Corporal punishment? I got paddled. Of course, look at me. So I guess we shouldn't use that as an example. Okay, I'm done.
Sam, don't you dare stop. You keep going. You're on a good train ride.
No.
I like
it. No, it gets old. You know what? It gets, to be honest with you, this story with the Ray Rice and everybody, it's almost as boring now to me as Miley Cyrus and her twerking or Justin Bieber.
That's the other irony of it, is that it lit up the airwaves for a while. But you're right. At this point, it's almost like, yeah, we're done with it. I mean, enough. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes on. I mean, today the lead story, of course, because the Ravens were playing the Browns, and many things, was all about Ray Rice until the actual game started. You know, and it'll be that way until the next crazy thing happens. You know what I mean? Until the next, and we all know it's going to happen. Look at the drug policy. I don't know if I said this yet. The fact that you can beat up, in the NFL, up until they change some things, you could beat Mary Jane, but you couldn't toke on Mary Jane. That was a terrible thing. But with most of the states having legal medical marijuana, two states legalizing it, the best player on our offense, Josh Gordon, was suspended for all 16 games because he smoked a joint last summer. But Ray Rice is beating up any girl named Mary, and he only got 2 days. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, right from that point on, you knew that the NFL had policies all screwed up.
Okay, and that begs the question, and the press have been whining about it for days. Should Goodell resign? Sam?
In my opinion, no. I don't see any of this changing. I don't think Goodell is the problem. Goodell is a very high-paid employee. He's an extremely high-paid employee. He works for 32 billionaires.
Yeah, I believe last year he brought in $22 million. Not bad money.
Oh, I thought last year he made $44
million. Yeah, Peter's right, Simon. He made $44
million. Now, part of your value as an employee in this kind of situation, part of the reason you're there, part of your purpose is to be a scapegoat. They're paying you top dollar not only to make them money, but also to take the blame when something happens. And, you know, he, like a good soldier, he walks out there and says, my bad, I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. And that's partly what they pay him for. They pay him to be the guy to be the lightning rod so that they don't have to look like it's their responsibility. That's the way employment cultures work, I think, in America and throughout the world. So I don't think he's going to have to resign. I don't think he will. And I think this will blow over. But, Simon, I wanted to go back to your statistics, and I guess I still don't quite understand them. Are these statistics that you're referring to, do they indicate that basically the level of crime is about the same with the exception of domestic violence, and that's higher in the NFL?
No. In all areas of crime, it is far lower in the NFL than any other category.
Any other category, meaning any other category of what? I mean, there's the general population. Criminals. I guess I just don't understand the statistics. They're far lower than the same degree of criminal activity in baseball players? Or are we talking
okay. No. DUIs. And as I said, I'm really sorry, I don't have them up in front of me.
Okay.
But
the statistics
are that something like 100,000 people get, busted for DUI. And the graph shows that, there's been a few DUIs, in the NFL, but it's something like, 13% of the number that are reported in the general public. The only area where the NFL peaks, but that they're still only 55% of the general public, is in domestic violence. So if you've got 100 cases of domestic violence in the general public, you've got 55 cases of it in the NFL.
That sounds to me like they have a domestic violence problem. That's what it sounds like these statistics seem to be saying.
How do you figure that?
I guess I just don't understand your statistics then. You say that if there's 100 domestic violence cases, 55 of them are in the NFL. I just don't understand the statistics. I can't understand if you're saying that the incidence of this crime is higher, lower, or the same in the NFL as opposed to the general U.S. population.
Oh, it's much, much lower.
According to these statistics, which I'm not sure I agree with, but fair enough.
Yeah, who did the stats? That's what I'd like to know. Someone for CBS Sports?
No, it's a statistical group called 528, I believe they're called. I'll tell you what, I'll try and bring them up.
That's all right. I just think that, it's just the culture, it's a violent sport, it was a violent country, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I'm not surprised. But as far as Goodell goes, I totally agree with Peter. He gets paid big money to take the run. I think he's going to face, I think he's going to get, might get fined or something. I might have to go take some sensitivity classes or anything. But if the real problem began now that was Brooke Friday night, I don't know if anybody knows it, but I'll share it, is that the Ravens owners and the Ravens management had this tape before Goodell did.
Yeah, Harbaugh. I read that article. It was a great article.
Yeah, it was a big story. It was a big story here because the Ravens were in town. So, you know, but Goodell, so the guy, Harbaugh, to his credit, wanted to get rid of him and a bunch of other players that they were having problems with before the minicamps opened. Ozzie Newsome said no. Biscotti, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, a billionaire, said no. And Harbaugh lost out, and then they went to New York. They had the hearings and all that stuff. So here's Goodell. Is he going to go against one of these guys who helped put him in that position? And I agree with Peter 100%. No. So that had a weigh on his mind too. And that's it. He won't go. And I think you'll see more and more cases. They'll firm up the – I mean, I was shocked, and I don't know about you guys, but weren't you shocked Michael Vick got back into the NFL?
Yes, I was.
Okay. So was I.
That did not surprise me.
Okay,
but,
surprised. Okay,
fair enough.
Me. Only okay. Because of the evidence. You know, like, Peter, you bring up a great point from the legality. What are the laws in New Jersey? The wife standing by the side, she's not going to testify. That makes perfect sense to me. But the dog.
Well, one of my theories about crime and punishment is that people forgive you if they think that you've paid your punishment. And Michael Vick flat out paid his punishment. I mean, he went to jail. Ray Rice was perceived as someone who avoided punishment, who dodged it. And by God, that made people furious. And if you pay your debt, I think people are much more capable of forgiving you and moving on. But if they perceive you as somebody who has avoided paying your debt to society in any way, then I think they hate you for it. And that's what's going on here. It's partly what Gary said is true. People were upset about the punishment that was handed out to Ray Rice to begin with because everyone largely suspected that what happened in the elevator was what they thought happened to the elevator. But then when the video surfaced and confirmed it, they were even more outraged that he had dodged punishment. And in the long run, I don't think anybody did Ray Rice any favors by being light on him. I think it would have been a lot better for him if they had punished him more. And then people, I think, could have forgiven him. But because they underpunished him, people were outraged.
Yeah, that's a good point. Peter, I've found the statistics, and I'll send them to you for your reading pleasure.
But generally, you're saying these statistics say that basically the rate of crime amongst the NFL population is lower than the rate of crime in the general population. That's basically the gist of it.
Yeah, far lower.
But the highest rate of crime within the NFL population is domestic violence.
Right.
Okay.
But it's still only slightly over half what...
If these statistics are true, or accurate, I should say, they're most certainly true. It's not clear if they're accurate. then, you know, it goes to what Gary was saying. And what Gary is saying is that this is a perception issue. And that, if people have to see this and then they realize that the NFL is not adequately addressing it, then they get up in arms. But if they don't see it, then, you know, they're more than willing, I think, generally to let it go. Although in this instance, I think what happened is people were so outraged by the fact that Goodell didn't come down harder that I think people actively worked to expose it and to basically punish Goodell for not coming down harder on him. And that's what happened. I mean, that's why TMZ went after this video. That's why people worked against Goodell to try to expose him. And, Sam, if you're talking about that article, I think the one, same one I read about outside the lines. You know how they had all these confidential sources that were revealing all these conversations that were supposedly had by people?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who are these sources? These are people.
I don't know. I've always wanted to know those.
They're talking about multiple sources, but
oh, multiple.
You know,
yeah, I know. Who
but that's
those?
What happens when people decide that the truth wants to be brought to light. People set their a critical mass starts forming, and everybody starts doing it. But suddenly, you got confidential sources everywhere. I mean, it's like they had microphones inside rooms to hear conversations.
The only thing I can think about, Peter, is that no one's going to say anything nowadays because of the electronic trail that can come back unless it's true. Agreed? No one's going to make up something.
I think generally speaking, that's true. I think there's some exceptions to it, but I think generally.
Okay, you're right. Of course, there's exceptions. But so I think what you've got is this happened. So let's say Jim Harbaugh went back and told his wife, I can't believe what Ray Rice did. Or they told a couple players. And then someone else told something. Of course, they're the old game of post office. These people who saw this video had to have told other people what happened back in February. And those are your unnamed sources. Maybe it was Ozzie Newsom's assistant who helped leak this and did stuff. And then you have all the Machiavellian things going on in the Baltimore Ravens organization, right? Maybe someone wants Ozzie's job. Maybe the vice president that Piscotti had. You know, they told people. You know, there's no way they did not. And I think that's where that stuff comes from. And
this is all basically. I mean, it's not unique to these set of circumstances. This is what goes on in the world every day.
Well, ask Donald Sterling.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
I mean, Donald Sterling. He's the poster boy for this. You know,
yeah.
So you do something stupid, you say something stupid, it's going to be used against you. But with this one, I think because people are so afraid, I think like these unconfirmed sources that have good information or confirmed sources of good information, in this particular Ray Rice case, because there was a cover-up, shall we say, by the Ravens front office and Goodall, it looks like, these guys are now in protect your ass mode.
Everybody's always in protect your ass mode.
That's true. Good point. But these guys, especially because they may. And listen, how would you like to be one of the persons who you never thought you would be you knew all this stuff, you got the information out, and now you're sweating bullets hoping that your boss doesn't find out that you're the one who leaked it to TMZ?
You know, isn't this just a recurring theme? Didn't we talk about these same things a few years ago when Joe Paterno's crisis broke? I mean, did he know? Didn't he know? Who covered it up? Who tried to hide it? And everybody was trying to cover it up, and everybody it went all the way to the top. And then this whole Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito saga, who knew? How could the coach not know? How could the owner not know? And everybody pointed fingers and a few heads rolled. And, you know, all these things are the same. And it's the same thing, you know, we talk about this in politics. How could someone not know about this? How could someone not know about that? And, you know, everybody's playing the same game of spin doctor all the way around the board.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And, you know, and these scandal things, and we love them. We like it because it's another issue to talk about. But the American public loves these scandals.
As far as I can tell, the best way to avoid a scandal, as far as I can tell, is to be a confidential informant.
Yeah. But, you know,
if I'm involved in a scandal and it involves me, come talk to me. I'll be your confidential informant. I'll tell you what happened.
Let me ask you a question. If you had that tape or a copy of it or access to it before anybody else did, and you're probably somebody in the Ravens organization, right?
Yeah.
They made a copy of that tape. Now, would you have leaked it out? Think of the money you made on that. Somebody made some serious dough on that.
Oh, I don't know how much dough they really made off of that. I don't know how much TMZ would pay for a copy of that tape. But here's the real interesting thing that I found about that article. There was one conversation that they had with the lawyer. And according to that article, the lawyer was very graphic and very colorful in his description of that video. And if you recall reading that article, that Outside the Lines piece, I mean, they quoted the lawyer. They quoted the lawyer making comments. And as a lawyer, I don't know how on earth, I mean, there's only two people on a phone call. So how on earth they get that information is beyond me. And
well,
by the way,
was taping it. Someone had to be taping it. Don't you think so?
Well, consider something else, Sam. If you're a criminal defense attorney in a case in which you represent an accused criminal defendant, the prosecution has an affirmative duty to disclose to you all evidence they have against that defendant, including any videotapes. So
okay.
I don't know how it is that they know what the attorney told people, but I do suspect that the attorney would have gotten a hold of that videotape. Now, those are just facts. I'm just saying facts. I don't know where you draw that, but I was certainly wondering how anybody would know precisely what I said in the phone conversation, unless I was the one revealing it.
Right.
I mean, I just don't know how anybody would figure that out unless I'm the guy who revealed it. And I do know that the attorney would have gotten a copy of that videotape. And if the attorney is basically trying to take heat off his client, then in one sense, that could be served by leaking some of this information.
Okay.
But whatever that's worth, for all the conspiracy theorists out there.
All right,
yep.
I'm looking at
but
the
one
clock.
That we do agree on, Peter, it's getting boring, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm already over it.
I know.
All right. So I'm looking at the clock. I don't have a lot of time left, but there was a subject, and Peter, you suggested it.
I was fascinated by it.
Okay.
What subject was it?
Scotland has decided to keep their kilts in England.
Well, it's very interesting. I don't know about all of you guys. Go ahead, Simon. I'm sorry.
In many ways, it reflected the same situation that Canada faced when Quebec tried the same ploy. Now, in that instance, had the whole of Canada been allowed to weigh in on the subject, there is little doubt that Quebec would indeed have been given their freedom. It would have removed a huge financial burden. For example, cans of baked beans would not be required to have two sets of instructions. One that's printed in English says heating instructions, and the other in French, mode d'emploi. Government forms and other information would only need to be printed in one language, English. This would be a huge tax saving, for the country. Peter, why were you interested in the Scotland vote?
Oh, I was interested in it because it seems to me I keep hearing increasing talk of secession here amongst members of various states in the United States. And I was also interested in it because it seems to me every time I turn on the television, I'm watching a movie that talks about how the Scots want their independence from England, whether it's Braveheart years ago or some crazy miniseries that I watch occasionally now called Outlander. Whatever it is, there are these Hollywood portrayals of the fearsome Scots wanting their independence. But for some reason, they don't really want it, or they don't want it that much. And I guess I'm just, you talked about the Canadian situation. You know, this province wants to secede, that province doesn't want to secede, but it doesn't happen. And here in the United States, there's been increased talk in recent years about some people in some states. They say, by gosh, I want to secede from these here United States. You know, I think I hear a lot of that talk sometimes coming out of Texas or some other state. But, maybe it's just talk. maybe no one's really serious about it. How would it really work anyway? I mean, what would actually happen if Texas said, that's it, we are now the separate, independent, sovereign nation of Texas? I mean, could they really do it? Would the rest of the country allow them to do it? Would we basically send in troops to prevent them from doing it? And what would it mean if we were somehow an independent nation, the United States of America minus one, and this was the great state of Texas, nation of Texas? You know, what would happen if Texas was invaded? Would we just say, oh, you know, we'd love to help you, but we really can't. It's your problem because now you're a separate nation.
Actually, you're not part of NATO.
I just don't know. That's why I guess it's interesting because I don't know how serious this talk is. I'm not even sure how it would manifest itself. I don't know if the even if they voted to secede, if that would have any effect whatsoever. It would be federal government would be like, okay, that's great, you voted to secede. By the way, here's the new federal legislation that applies to all states, including yours. I mean, I just don't know.
And that's a great question. Sam, any thoughts?
It was a great question. I don't know what would happen. I'm glad, you know, I think it's more, it just... who knows what would have happened? William Wallace lost and Britain won. God save the Queen and all that sort of stuff. I don't know what would have happened. I don't know what the plan was. I didn't really follow it that much. For once, the British Empire held together without having to fire a shot, I guess, for lack of a better term. You know, we fought a war to get away from them, and Scotland tried to do by the ballot box, but it didn't work. So I guess the Scots have to go back to what William Wallace wanted. Get those giant axes.
View this in terms of Texas, and yes, they have made noises about wanting to... become independent.
Well, parts of California want to secede from each other, too. Does the Northern California always bang the drum about seceding from the rest of California, Peter?
I guess my point is that if you want to secede, and I hate to say this, but if you want to secede, you secede. You don't talk about having a vote about whether or not you're going to do it. Because, you know, we didn't, you know, have a vote and, you know, ask the... English government was okay if we separated. We said, that's it, we're done. You know, if you want to start a war over it, come on over, let's do it. But, you know, that's the way countries form. They don't form by, let's take a vote and, you know, we'll see if we got a majority. That seems to me to be doomed to fail. Go ahead.
But Peter, surely that's what's happening in... Iraq and Syria with the ISIS folks.
Yeah, that's right. That's what they're doing. And that's where this conversation dovetails. They're saying, we want to be whatever it is we want to be, and we're not talking about doing it. We're doing it. And you're right. That's why. That's just the way, the reality of the world.
That is a good point. Would you rather have Scottish vote for independence, or would you rather have what they're doing in ISIS? Good point.
Well, I would rather have Scottish votes for independence because, in my opinion, that's a nonviolent way of basically just expressing dissatisfaction with government but not really doing anything about it. And I think that's okay. but obviously, some people feel different. Now, here's the real chilling thought. I think there are people within the states who basically embrace the same concept that we just kicked around the table, which is, look, you know, we don't want to be a part of this place anymore, and by God, we're going to do it. I mean, that's what all these crazy cults are. That's what these compounds are of these, private citizens declaring their war on the world. That's what Waco was. I guess I'm just concerned that there may be greater increase in that activity in the future.
Okay, gentlemen, I'm looking at the clock, and we are flat out of time. So I want to ask you both for your parting thoughts. Peter, I'll start with you.
Well, I hope everyone has a pleasant week, and, you know, hopefully it's not as bad as we like to think it is sometimes. Maybe the world would become a better place, but I think it's going to have to become a worse one first, and that's what I worry about.
That's a depressing thought.
Well, that's what Gary
well,
said.
I'm going to end it on a happy note. I had a great time today, even though we had some technical difficulties. I missed Gary and Bill, but I want you to know that as we close the show today, that there was a city in Florida that has ruled that saggy pants are now legal. It's
awesome.
Ocala. I'm mispronouncing that. I apologize. But Ocala City Council voted 4-1 today, this weekend, to make saggy pants legal.
So
the world's in a better shape today because now we can all go wear our pants down to our saggy pants. They don't even call them baggy pants anymore. They call them saggy pants.
So Bill isn't here anymore? So Bill isn't here anymore?
O-C-A-L-A. I don't know how you pronounce that. Ocala, Ocala. Ocala City Council by a vote of 4-1.
I think it's Osceola.
Osceola, okay. That's it. So everybody have a great week. The Browns can't lose next week. It's a bye week.
Perfect. And Bill, are you still on the line?
I'm still here.
No!
I don't know what happened to me. I thought I left,
You need to shout out.
Yes.
Well, NFL and everything, but I did learn something today. I'm very excited. The NFL is a better organization than I thought it was, and I was thinking that maybe the federal government could learn some lessons from it. Maybe the crime level within our own government could be lowered if they were to use the shining example of the NFL, considering how many assassinations and how many bombings and all the innocent people we killed, that they need to learn that from the NFL. And so I did learn that. What was the second thing I learned from the NFL? The second thing I learned from the NFL is that the whole statistic thing with the crimes that they
What happened?
I
think we just lost him. That happens. Anyway, tis time to go. Till next week, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again next Sunday. Till next time, goodbye.